This is The Agenda from News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com, where topics of local concern affecting you are open for discussion. And now your host, Michael Knight.
What do you know about baseball? You know anything about the game? It's 12:15. I ask you this question because it's a baseball show today, a hot stove league for the Apple Sox. Baseball began apparently as a game called Rounders. I didn't even know that. I looked it up today. The man named David Block, who's a baseball historian, suggested the game originated in England, and I mean way back in 1740s, when the British publication Little Pretty Pocketbook by John Newbery discovered that the game of bass, with two S's, bass ball, took place in Surrey in 1749 and featured the Prince of Wales as a player. Don't know if he got any hits. Don't know if he got traded to Cincinnati. This is the early form of the game that was apparently brought to Canada by some English immigrants in a small leather pouch. What part of that sentence did I make up? So now it's the early 1830s, and there's all sorts of varieties of uncodified bat and ball games all over the place. In 1845, Alexander Cartwright, a member of the New York City's Knickerbocker Club, remember that name, tried to organize the rules so that all the Knickerbocker players were playing the same game, and it's called, naturally, the Knickerbocker Rules. You can look it up. 1845. The contest, long recognized as the first recorded game, was the next year, June of 1846. In New York? Yankee Stadium? No. Hoboken, New Jersey is the home of baseball. My God, the New York Nine defeated the Knickerbockers. And don't feel bad about this if your team always loses. The final score in the first game, 23-1. You think it went extra innings? No, the game lasted four innings. Knickerbockers and the New York Nine. Well, what does that have to do with life here in Wenatchee on a day where it could snow? My very special guests are Jose Oglesby, the owner of the Apple Sox, and Joel Norman, the play-by-play man for the Apple Sox. We're going to talk a little bit about baseball. So, Jose, Joel, welcome to the show. Welcome to the game. Welcome to another edition of Rounders.
Hello, Michael. Nice to be here.
When you buy a baseball team, what goes through your mind in the weeks preceding your actual purchase? What do you think about, and what did you think about before you said, I'm going to be a baseball owner. I'm going to buy that team.
Thing that goes through your mind is first you say, oh wow, I'm going to have so much fun with this thing. This is great. I am going to do so many ideas and so many things to think of Bill Beck and his whole history of bringing up people to come and play that you wouldn't necessarily ordinarily see at a stadium.
So if you fashion yourself after Bill Beck, I'm not going to miss this game this year because God knows what you have up your sleeve.
Well, I tell you what. So that's what you think in the hours preceding the day that you actually say, okay, I'm buying. And then, in the days afterwards, you go, oh my God, what have I done?
Exactly. Well, who did you call to say, you'll never guess what I just did? I bought a baseball team.
Well, my wife first.
Oh. And you only told her afterwards, right?
Oh yeah.
There you go. Surprise. Yeah, I'm sure she would have advised you. What team are you buying? Are they 500 yet? Yeah. So when you buy a team, the first thing you do is look around and say, my God, I've bought a team, but these guys change every year. I don't really know who's going to be my... I can't even say who's going to be my best player 2 years from now. Mm-hmm. How does that feel?
Well, no, that's fine. I'm okay with that. There was a recently, since we're talking a Hot Stuff League, I think there was some baseball exec, I forget who it was, that got in trouble for saying and writing to the media or the players or something like that, saying that the players don't matter.
Right? Oh, I saw that. I saw that coming.
I forget who it was. I think it was somebody in the Red Sox, actually, especially though. So, yeah. Oh, yeah, I know who it was. It was Bill James.
Oh, there you go.
It was Bill James who wrote this memo saying, oh, it doesn't matter what players we have.
We have an
We'll just apply our process, do our specific calculations, and we'll win the World Series.
And actually, the Sox did win the World Series, but only with a handful of personalities. I mean, that was a war zone when you think about it.
So I don't know. I love our players. I mean, basically our mission is different. Our mission is to develop the players of tomorrow, the stars of tomorrow. We get to have them for, one summer at a time. Sometimes, actually, we have some players that have been here, 4 years.
But that's unusual, right?
It's unusual. It's not very. It's rare. But we want to get those players ready to be professional baseball players. Have those that have the dream. Obviously, not all of them are going to make it. But we want to encourage as many as we can to follow their dream.
Years and years ago, my grandfather, who was a professional pitcher, owned a team in Ogden, Utah. I think it was a D-League team before the Great Depression, when those things were still was a going concern. And my father had to roast the peanuts every day. It was a family business. The odd thing is about it that was a job for the whole family. It was a family-owned business, and maybe you were doing the same similar thing. You find out that what you've bought is like a corner shop in a town.
Well, I should mention that my niece is the assistant general manager.
See?
And my wife dabbles in everything. And my son helps to do the video streaming of our games.
So, and they're all experts, right? They all give you great advice.
No, none of us are experts at what we do. But we're getting there. We're learning a ton.
How did you become a baseball fiend? Because you can't buy a team unless you've got it in your blood. I think possibly you could own a basketball team, maybe a football team. But most people who own baseball teams are either representatives of a bank or passionate about the game.
I think I'm passionate about the game. I've been a baseball fan, you know, forever. You know, I grew up with baseball, playing baseball, watching baseball, listening to radio stations of, you know.
Who was your team?
Well, there was this... mostly local teams where I was growing up in Colombia, actually.
You mean teams playing in Colombia?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, well, there's a lot of great players come out of there.
Yes, a lot of great players did come out of there. So I would listen to those games, and then I started following the major leagues, Las Ligas Mayores, right?
Yes.
The big leagues. And I listened to the radio broadcast for those. And so the first World Series that I listened to was Minnesota... and the Dodgers, I think it was.
Dodgers?
Yeah, the Minnesota Twins.
I'm not familiar with them. Is that a team?
As a Giants fan, of course.
And the LA Dodgers back in 64 or something, I'm going to say. And then after that, I sort of, you know, became a follower of the American League. I like the American League. So I was always rooting for the Tigers and the Red Sox.
Red Sox don't need your help. The Tigers do, however, need some help.
Well, back then, one of the big attractions for me was, you know, the Red Sox always came close.
Yes.
And never closed the deal. So that you know.
That's this is their century, though, isn't it? The 21st century.
It was a weird time. Red Sox couldn't get arrested. Well, they could in Boston, but nowhere else. What do you like about going to work every day and owning a team? Does it require something from you every day? Is it a constant massaging of the
everything
books?
There's always something new, which is something that I like. There's always a new project that we're working on, a new opportunity, a new person to meet, new clients, new sponsors, and new season fans. Just today I was riding in an Uber here in Wenatchee, and it turns out that the gentleman that was driving the Uber was, you know, a baseball player and an Apple Sox fan. And
really?
You know, it was fun. It's fun to make those connections. He told me that there was a softball team, Wenatchee, that won a world championship.
I wasn't aware of that.
I'm going to have to go look that up.
Well, beer league goes all the way. Good for them. Some people usually say you can't buy a sailboat unless you have a lot of money, because it's just a hole in the ocean in which you pour that money. Is baseball like that? Is there any return on this investment?
We're trying not to have it be that way. You know, fiscally, our goal is, you know, to be prudent, to not waste a lot of money, not to lose money, and to try to make it be a going concern. That's the, because, you know, it doesn't do anybody any good if, you know, we have a team and we, you know, spend ourselves out of existence.
That right.
Doesn't, you know, we want to be a part of this community. The Apple Sox have been here for 19 years. We hope to be here for the next 19 years.
Of course.
So that requires, you know, being, you know, careful and prudent.
Both of you guys can answer this in order. How do you know when you get your team? Who's going to be on this team? Do you have any idea who's going to be on the starting nine?
Our head coach, Kyle Cross-Angel, is a huge part of that. He does a great job at building contacts with other local colleges or even outside of the local area, too. He just done a great job at finding guys from his local schools and going into California a little bit. You know, our former head coach, Ed Nags, did a great job at that as well. It's kind of just about connections. which is the way a lot of the world works, isn't it?
It is.
So it almost makes sense that way.
Well, what schools do you guys follow? What are the good baseball schools in the West that give you good players?
You know, I think, well, I've talked about this with Kyle a million times, but at the end of the day, what he really does when he's searching, it's not necessarily getting certain players. It's who is a coach willing to send? How many guys will he send? It's not really like, I'm going to give you my best guy because I like you the most. Sometimes that's the case, but a lot of times it's just, okay, this guy and this guy, they need to go somewhere. Maybe that's a good location-wise for them. So it's kind of just about what that school's coach wants to do with that player.
Our very special guest today, our baseball mania, Jose Oglesby, the owner of the Apple Sox, Joel Norman, the play-by-play man. We're going to talk more about the upcoming season right after these words. Well, maybe not. How about after these words?
You're listening to The Agenda on News Radio.
12:30 exactly here at the Avenue of Dreams on Wenatchee Avenue. Michael Knight in the Palatial Radio Studios of KPQ. My very special guests are Jose Oglesby, the owner of the Apple Sox, and Joel Norman, the broadcaster for the Apple Sox, the man that does the play-by-play. And he's the jack-of-all-trades down there. Now vice president of all operations or whatever they call him.
I wish. Not quite, though. No, we've got a great front office.
Everybody starts following baseball whenever they start. You can start as an adult. You can start as a child. You probably started as a kid in Pittsburgh. Why is baseball even in your life?
I don't know. It's probably this. I think I credit my dad a lot. I kind of bonded with him over that growing up. Right around when I started having an attention span, I think, is when I got into it. Because, you know, as a kid, you know, you sit around, you go, all right, well, it takes how long for a pitch to come in? But then I think about like 12 or so, I started really getting into it. I really enjoyed going to games and then watching them on TV and then learning how to score. And next thing you know, I'm broadcasting them a little bit later.
I still like to keep score. I don't do that much anymore because I fade in and out. But
I think when I go to games and I'm not broadcasting, I still score anyway, just out of habit.
Well, to stay in the game.
Absolutely. But, I mean, as a broadcaster, you have to score, right? But as a fan, you don't really have to, but you're into it more. And I enjoy that a lot more when I score at a game.
Try this sometime. It's an apocryphal story, but I heard that Willie Mays used this technique to stay in the game.
Okay.
He never took his eye off what?
The ball?
Exactly. All he did was watch the ball. If the pitcher had the ball, he watched the pitcher. If they're throwing it around the infield, he watched the ball go from man to man. If it went down the sidelines and was fouled and they came back, he'd wait until the pitcher got the ball. He would follow the ball. He never, ever was without that empirical knowledge. There is the ball.
I guess he never fell for the hidden ball trick, huh?
Not Willie. Although there's a lot of infielders that would love to have tried it on him, Jose. That's for damn sure. Yeah. And if you try that sometime, if you play beer league ball, that's how you stay in the game. Just Absolutely. Never take your eye off the ball. It makes the game so simple. You always know where the ball is. In fact, you can start seeing the rotation, and you can just get all the English off the ball by the way it comes off the bat.
Absolutely.
You'll start seeing it differently. Cool. Remarkable trick that Willie Mays came up with. So simple that it's genius.
Exactly.
So who was your player for the Pittsburgh Pirates? Who was the guy that you had that you always wanted to get to hit?
Well, you know, it was kind of tough because I'm trying to remember when I first started being a fan. I mean, they had 20 years of losing seasons, not just missing the playoffs, but they had a losing record until 2013. And I think because it was tough to key on and get a guy because they would trade the guys so fast. So that was
never
a problem.
Got to know them.
You had a few, and you said, "Okay, he's nice." 3 years later, he's gone.
He's gone. Didn't Prospect. He used to play for us?
Yeah. And then you go see him win a World Series, and you go, "Ah, well, that's a bummer." But I mean, I really liked Andrew McCutchen over the last few years, understandably. You know, with how he kind of helped get the Pirates back to winning. He was there for some losing seasons, then he was there when they started winning again. It was nice seeing him. I liked him a lot. I liked Neil Walker because he was from Pittsburgh. He grew up about 20 minutes from where I lived, so that was really cool. It was someone we said, this is one of our guys helping us win again. So I like those
Pittsburgh's
guys.
Like that, isn't it? It's like a small town that totally embraces its teams
in
a very emotional way.
The Steelers especially.
Sorry, those are the Stillers.
The Stillers, correct. If you're saying it right, yeah. You know, but I say whenever the Pirates are winning, they're the second favorite team over the Penguins, though.
So it's really interesting that, you know, I was saying how I became an American League fan.
Yes.
Well, in 1970, I switched.
Did you?
And the team that made me switch was the Pittsburgh Pirates.
How come?
I really loved that team. And they had a catcher from Panama, where I was living at the time, in Manny San Guillen.
Yeah, oh, God. He was a great catcher.
He was fantastic.
And one of the fastest catchers ever.
He loved to hit the bad ball.
It was a bad bull either.
He's got a barbecue place at PNC Park in center field during games, and any smoke you see on camera comes from his barbecue.
You're kidding.
Place.
No, really?
That's Manny's place?
Oh, my God. Manny's, I'll have to go back.
Well, that's funny, because if you see smoke coming from right field in Baltimore, that's Boog Powell's.
That's, that's right. This is good,
only the certain guys.
Baltimore has the best food in the country of any ballpark, hands down. I'll bet anyone
really?
On that. I love their food there. It's all, see, it's all crab. They put crab in everything.
I had a great
and
time
Old
there.
That's right. I was rooting for that 1970s Pittsburgh Pirates team. You know,
they had some good teams.
Roberto Clemente.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Last year.
Stargell.
That was Stargell.
Everyone loved that 79 team. That's the one people talk about that a lot.
Was Tecovy on that team?
Tecovy was, yeah. He closed out the World Series against Baltimore that year.
Oh, so you know everything pitch by pitch. I should have known.
I know a decent amount.
And they had, didn't they have Steve Blass?
Steve Blass was on the 71 champs. He had the yips in the mid-70s, though.
Yes, he did.
Yeah. So when you go back and look at all the players that inspired you, Jose, who comes to mind?
Well, you know, Clemente,
other than the ones we've talked about. Well, Clemente,
the one we've talked about. But then, of course, Yaz in Boston.
Oh, yes.
You know, tremendous player. I love the Boomer.
Oh, yes.
Boomer Scott, George Scott.
Yeah.
He was great. Louis Tiant.
Oh, I interviewed Louis Tiant.
Did you?
I interviewed Louis Tiant, and he and Boog Powell were on the tour.
Oh, man.
And I said, where did you come up with that windup? It's rather extraordinary. And Louis said, oh, I didn't do much. And Boog said, you turned around and faced the center fielder, Louis, as if he had to explain it to him.
The worst part is that so many other pitchers got that, started adopting that delivery.
And just couldn't do it.
Exactly.
You turn around and throw it to third. No, you got to turn all the way around.
Right.
Oh, God.
No, definitely those cause. And then so many over the years. And then, of course, then I came to Seattle over 25 years ago. And, you know, we had the kid.
Exactly.
We had Louis Cora.
Yeah.
We had Dan the Man.
Yeah.
Edgar, St. Edgar.
And the Bone, Buehner and Wright.
And the Bone, totally. And the pitchers, not to mention the pitchers, right? With the big unit. I mean, that's the thing about baseball is, I think it creates this, more so than other sports, I think, creates this personalities and players that you care about that you sort of grow up with.
I always thought that Randy Johnson looked angry when he was on the mound, but he was just as angry in the dressing room. He was a little spiky to talk to.
Yes, I heard that he didn't like to be approached on game day.
On game day, I wouldn't get anywhere near him.
He's always like the aloof.
But just like after the game, he was still in quite a mood, I must say.
He's a photographer now.
Is he really? No,
yeah,
I didn't know that.
He has a Twitter account just of all the photos he takes.
Oh, I'll check him out.
Really?
They're actually pretty good. But, I mean, it kind of seems like the right thing for someone of his personality. But you wouldn't guess that, right? A former major league pitcher.
No.
Okay.
Some of those guys have wonderful hobbies, and some of them have nothing but baseball. I understand it's all consuming. Are you consumed by the Apple Sox, Jose?
You know, I spend a lot of time thinking about what we can do better, what we can do to improve the game, what we can do. I mean, baseball is going through this whole notion of speed of the game and things like that. The game has slowed down way a lot. We have, you know, I mean, I was watching the playoffs in Major League Baseball this fall, and man, all those pitching changes are driving me nuts.
But you can do that if you've got 10 good pitchers.
Absolutely.
And there were a lot of good pitchers in that World Series.
They did. They had some great pitchers. But even so, it seems to me like, you know, why do they need to warm up once they get on? But then they want to warm up in the bullpen. You know, have them ready to go.
Get
you know,
some of the new catcher.
And
tradition.
Yeah. You know, it's tradition. And,
yeah.
And,
that's what's
and,
killing me.
You know, there are some traditions that, you know, yeah. You know, it used to be you didn't change pitchers once in games, right?
Right. You made the guy go 18 innings.
Danny McLain won 30 games.
Yeah.
And it started, you know, 35 or something like that.
They started the specialization. But this year, when oddly, I thought, you would have never, if you had come up with the idea, said, look, what we're going to do is start with the bullpen. The guy's going to pitch one inning, or he'll give us as much as he can. Give us three outs if you can. Other than that, I'm going to come and get you in the first inning. We're going to use nine pitchers, one an inning.
Right. No, I'd be totally bored with that.
They would have thought you were crazy, Jose. They would have thought you were out of your mind.
That's where the game's going, though, with the research you have with arms and the fatigue that comes with it and the way guys were affected after their careers. You know, it's just one of those things. I like the strategy involved with, you know, using pitchers because it's a chess match. That's what's so great about baseball. But on the other hand, it does make for some longer games, a little more stops in play, and that's a little tough. You know, you look at the one playoff game. What was that? The Dodgers and Brewers The guy who started, I can't remember, was it Miley, I think, he faced one batter and then he left the game. It's like, what?
And he didn't get him out.
Yeah, exactly. He walked out.
He retired, he retired nobody.
Yeah, so that's a, you know, zero innings pitching line.
What's his ERA?
Well, the guy didn't score, so I don't think he got anything, but that was ridiculous. And then he started the next game.
Well, that's the thing. The guys you see today, you're going to see tomorrow in a different order.
Exactly. But it's fun, like I said, from the strategic point, but as a viewer, that's tough to watch because that's more commercials, more non-action, more tossing the ball around the infield and the outfield while pitcher warms up. So I don't know how you fix that. I don't want Major League Baseball to put a limit on the number of pitchers you can use. I got a bad feeling they're going to.
I don't think they should because it's become a strategy that we're just getting familiar with and it hasn't been used to its utmost yet. So let's find out where this idea can go of using 10 pitchers five times a week.
Yeah, we need to get used to it, I guess.
I don't know.
I think it's the future, honestly.
What about the shift?
The shift? You can't ban the shift.
No,
you can't
ban
the shift at all. I'm all for it.
The thing to do, if they're shifting to right field and you are a pro player that cannot hit it to left field, I have no mercy.
I'm with you there.
I'm sorry, I have no mercy. You don't know how to bunt? Yeah, that's very sad.
Drop down a bunt.
That's probably going to limit your career. If they're giving you half the field and you can't get on base,
I
can't sing any hymns for you.
I don't like when batters complain about the shift, but I don't like it even more when the defensive players complain about someone dropping down a bunt if it's given. Why would you not? You know, like, it's not coward. That's being smart.
Absolutely.
Did we use the shift much in the WCL last year?
The Apple Sox, we would do it a decent amount. A lot of times, our outfield, there was the bigger one, we would shift a little bit more in the outfield.
You got to know something on the players. You know, you might not have a scouting report yet.
There's enough out there, though. You know what I mean? It's sometimes some of these players are guys who the coaches have seen in a different level, whether they're coaching at the community college level or it's someone they've seen before. Sometimes you kind of know that. Sometimes you adjust based on perhaps pitch counts, how many outs, you know. It varies every game and every situation, though.
How's the league this year? Has it changed from year to year in terms of its strength and its weaknesses?
We're kind of excited. This year we're going to have a new team down in Richfield.
What's their name?
The Richfield Raptors.
The Raptors.
Yep.
Okay.
And I actually don't think we're going to go down to Richfield.
No, they come to us.
They come to us, but we don't go down there. It's, now that we have 12 teams in the league, it's 6 in the north and 6 in the south. So that makes it, hopefully it'll make it a little easier for travel and things like that.
How is traveling for your guys? I mean, it's,
he can take that one.
He goes
on every road game.
I've opened up a can of worms. All right, Joel, travel is like what?
Well, you gotta be careful where you get your gas from sometimes. So we had one time where we were coming back. This was a 6-game road trip. We were in Portland, then we went to Corvallis right after. Corvallis back to Wenatchee is a decent hike on its own.
That's a while.
But it's a little worse when you're stopping every hour. And you have to slow down each time because, you know, you're having problems with the gas you got.
You got bad gas?
We did. Yeah, I'm not going to throw the company under the bus, but I know where they were from.
But you would have liked to have thrown them under the bus.
I would, and I will never buy gas from them. But, but I mean, that was frustrating, and we were stopping every hour. And I remember we got in about, I think it was 4 in the morning. It was really early. And we were about to turn toward the ballpark where the bus was just turning in on the street. And right as we're about to turn, it just stalled. And everyone there, everyone on the bus, we kind of looked around and we all just started laughing because we were like, of course it stalled at the very end of the journey. Let's just get out now and call it a day. But
so what's the furthest you have to go away? Corvallis is pretty far.
Corvallis is a hike. I'm trying to remember where might be the farthest. Victoria is the longest day, I will say that, just because you have to do the ferry too.
Oh, yeah.
We had one day, we had a Sunday game. It was a 1 o'clock game, but we didn't take the ferry until about 7:30.
Wow.
So game ends around 4. We get there pretty early. We're sitting around for a while, you know, so that's a long day. But other than that, you know, all of them are pretty reasonable, all things considered.
Pretty comfortable buses, you think?
Buses are pretty good, yeah.
Is it the same one every time, so you have your own little cubby holes? Or?
I think it changed a couple times.
Okay.
For the most part, it was the same one all year. We had our own, like, you had your own almost assigned seating. It's like in school, you know. When someone sits in your own seat, it's not assigned, but it's also like, wait a second.
You can't win if you're in the wrong seat.
Exactly. You know, I had times, I joke with this with my friends in college, you'd say, oh, that was my seat. And I was like, it's a pretty big lecture hall. And they'd say, well, I'm not going to go if I don't get my seat.
We're talking with the Apple Sox Brain Trust. Jose Oglesby is the owner. He purchased the team last year. Thanks, Jose, for keeping the team in town. You could have moved it to Baltimore. And Joel Norman, the play-by-play man, and also the man that he's the jack-of-all-trades. That's the word I was looking for, or the phrase. It's 12:43. We'll be right back to talk more baseball right after this.
Yeah. You're listening to The Agenda on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
0555 Western Ranch Buildings, locally owned and celebrating over 40 years.
The Agenda with Michael Knight on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.
It's 1249 at News Radio 560 KPQ. Special guest today for The Agenda, Jose Oglesby, the owner of our baseball team, the Apple Sox, Joel Norman, the play-by-play man. I have a note here to ask you about the new logo. Tell me about it, Joel.
It's exciting. You know, next season will be our 20th season in league.
20 great years.
Yeah, 20 years overall. It's pretty exciting. You know, for summer league baseball teams, it's impressive to get that far, if I do say so.
They usually move on to another town?
Not just sometimes, you know, they just don't last. You know, they don't make the right decisions. I think that's the fact that we're at this point is a testament to people like Jim Corcoran, Ken Osborne,
right.
Jose continuing this. So we're really excited about that. We've got a logo we'll be unveiling next week. So we're
Woo-hoo.
Really excited about that. So stay tuned to our social media for that.
What do you think you've done to put your own stamp of authenticity on this team, Jose? What about this team is now yours?
Well, I mean, my big thing on this is having continuity. And having Ken, having all the work that Jim Corcoran did in building this franchise and establishing relationships, you know, it's great. So my main concern in this is to keep that tradition going, building on what we have. You know, you really appreciate all the work that has gone on before. Now, having said that, you know, yeah, we're definitely going to take a look at new things and new way of doing things. In some cases, we might experiment with some other parks are doing in-seat ordering.
Mm-hmm.
You know, order your food. You don't have to go to get in the long line
at
the concessions. And we'll bring your beer to you and things
like
that. We'll start doing some, there's some fan engagement things that we can do, including predicting what's going to happen with the play. You know, mm-hmm. you can practice on your phone and have a little contest going on. We can do things like another thing that I really want to do is bring back community involvement. So I would like to have some little league games on days that the team isn't here, or maybe some old timers game. I mean, would you be in a celebrity softball game there?
I can hit, baby. I'll be there.
I'll put it to the test.
I used to play the outfield. Now I think I'd be more comfortable at first base
there
if you
go.
Don't mind.
Well, there you go.
As long as there's no left-handed hitters that are going to scorch one down the line.
Well, so you got to worry about it.
Wherever the weakness is, that's where the ball goes, as you know, Jose.
I think the hard part is going to be finding pitchers then.
Absolutely. And anyone underhand or something?
I can throw it 71.
Hey, that's not bad.
So we want to do things like that. You know, really, to me, a baseball team should really be a celebration of the community.
We're running out of time, Jose. Of all the questions I wrote down, the one I didn't ask you, which I think I really have to ask you, is where do you get your baseballs?
I get them from the league. I said, hey, league, send me 230 baseballs, and the package arrives every spring.
Is that what it takes to do a season? 200, 400, how many?
I have no idea. Ken Osborne, very fine GM, would know exactly
how many balls you used last year.
Me... Oh, you know, I leave the baseball decisions to the baseball.
Well, every time you ask Ken about baseballs, he kind of scratches his head, you know, rolls his eyes a little bit. He has to think about that because that's kind of a sunk cost for any business.
Right.
When's opening day, guys?
June 4th.
June 4th, the Apple Sox play their first game. Jose Oglesby, owner, thanks for being here today, Jose. My pleasure to talk with you. Joel Norman, the play-by-play man, you'll be able to hear him call the balls and strikes when the season gets here. And Joel, it's good to talk with you. So when you get that new logo and the book is ready to publish, The History of the Apple Sox, let me know. We'll have another show. You mean then play ball.
That's good.
Thanks
for
being
Michael.
Here.
Thanks a lot, Michael.
You're listening to The Agenda on News Radio 560 KPQ and KPQ.com.